So the next sutta, Majjhima 40, the Chula Asapura Sutta, has a parallel in the Majjhima Agama. Okay. Also said, that's how the Angams named Asapura, when the Buddha again addressed them as ascetics, because that is how people perceive you. And when you're asked, what are you? You claim that you are recluses, since that's how you're designated, and what you claim to be, you should train. Thus, we shall practice the way proper to the recluse. Okay, so this is a slightly different formulation than the previous one. Samana Samichi Patipada. Okay, and whereas the previous sutta spoke of the Dhamma Samana Karana, those Dhammas that making of a recluse. Okay, so, but otherwise the introduction is just the same as the previous sutta. So how does a bhikkhu practice the way proper to a recluse? For so long as a bhikkhu whose covetousness has not abandoned covetousness, who is a mind of ill will, has not abandoned ill will, who is angry, has not abandoned anger, who has not abandoned resentment, who has not abandoned contempt, or insolence, or envy, or avarice, or fraud, or deceit, or evil wishes, or wrong view, for this so long he does not practice the way proper to a recluse. I say because of his failure to abandon these stains for the recluse, these faults of the recluse, these dregs for the recluse, which are grounds for rebirth in a state of deprivation and whose results are to be experienced in an unhappy destination.
So what are dregs?
Yeah, that's a good question. Abhihina, samana malang, the stains, samana dosanang is the faults, samana kasatanang, okay, it's the dregs. I'm not familiar with that word.
Don't say that in the beginning. You're going to have to wash your dregs.
Yeah, maybe the same one. Okay. Suppose the weapon called a mataja, well wetted on both ends, means the wetted, okay, sharpened, and encased in a patchwork sheath. I say that such a bhikkhu's going forth is comparable to that. So exactly what the mataja is not quite sure, but it seems to be mata is dead, and ja is born, so the born of death. Ja usually means born of something like that. So you say, like in the previous sutta, samadhi jang, born of samadhi.
Born of death.
Yeah, born of death. The weapon born of death.
So, be born to cause death.
Yeah, whatever it was, I'm not sure what that mataja is.
What does that mean, comparable to the sharpened and then the patchwork sheath?
Oh, it's like a monk's going forth, he's still kind of sharpened and deadly and you know, so on, but he's wrapped in his robe, his patchwork robes, that doesn't stop him from being deadly.
Ah, so the patchwork sheath here is referring to robes.
Yeah. I do not say that the ascetic status comes about in a patchwork cloak wearer through the mere wearing of the patchwork cloak, nor in a naked ascetic through mere nakedness, nor in one caked with dust and dirt through being caked with dust and dirt, like the Jains who didn't have baths, nor in a ritualistic bather through mere ritualistic bathing, like the Jatila ascetics who in the Buddha met before teaching the fire sermon, nor in a tree root dweller through mere dwelling at the root of a tree, nor in an open air dweller through mere dwelling in the open air, nor in a practitioner of continuous standing through mere continuous standing that we spoke about the other day, nor in a taker of food at stated intervals through mere taking of food at stated intervals, nor in a reciter of incantations through mere reciting of incantations. Manta jhayaka. Manta is the mantras, literally the mantras, usually referring to the Vedas, ajhayaka, okay, so reciting of incantations.
Incantations, mantra is this sort of...
Mantra.
The word is mantra, manta.
Okay, it's just like a mantra.
But it would have been referring to the Vedas or some kind of Vedic poems and verses and things. The mantras usually refer to the Vedas in the suttas. And I do not say that a recluse's status comes about in a matted hair ascetic through mere wearing of the hair matted. So all of the rastas have to be disappointed with that. So, If through the mere wearing of the patchwork cloak, a patchwork cloak wearer who was covetous has abandoned covetousness, and so on, then his friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, would make him a patchwork cloak wearer as soon as he was born, and have him undertake the patchwork cloak wearer wearing thus. Come, my friend, be a patchwork cloak wearer, so that by the mere wearing of a patchwork cloak, when you're covetous, you will abandon covetousness, and so on. But I see here a patchwork cloak wearer who is covetous, who has a mind of ill will and wrong view, and that is why I do not say that the recluse's status comes about merely through the wearing of the patchwork cloak. Okay, so the Buddha typically, as you saw in the last sutta, reinterpreting all the practices in an ethical way.
So just because you go forth doesn't mean that you're free, doesn't make you free from all defilements.
Yeah, and then the same with all the other practices. So one who does practice the way proper to a recluse, of course, is the one who's abandoned all of those wrong dhammas, ill will, anger, contemptuousness, avariciousness, envy, deceit, wrong view, and so on. And who's abandoned those things, when he sees himself purified of these evil and unwholesome dhammas, he sees himself liberated from them. When he sees this, gladness is born in him. When his glad rapture is born in him, one who's rapturous, the body becomes tranquil. One whose body is tranquil feels pleasure, and one who feels pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. So, of course, this being one of the most important psychological statements found in the suttas very frequently. Tasa sabehi imehi papakehi akusalehi dhamehi visuddha matta nang samanupasato. So, seeing all of these evil and wholesome dhammas purified, pamo jang jayati, gladness is born. Okay? Pamuditasa piti, must be. Why piti is replaced by anything? Anyway, pamuditasa, for one who has piti, well, gladness and rapture is born.
The word mudita.
Mudita, pamudita.
What does that mean? Pamuditasa?
It's just gladness. It's the same, this is pamojang. Pamuditasa is the same word as pamojang. Pamojang is gladness. Pamuditasa is for one who is glad. Okay. Yeah, jayati piti manasa, one who has rapture in the mind, then the body becomes tranquil.
With this, the commentaries explain the seven factors as factors of one who is awoken. They explain it like that, don't they? But however, in the suttas, it's explained as the factors for awakening.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this isn't actually, I mean, this isn't explicitly talking about the bodhjhangas here. But yeah, it's quite correct that the bodhjhangas are factors leading towards awakening.
Rather than saying that one is not possessed.
Yeah. Vidhi manasa. Okay, the body is tranquil. Pasadha kayo. When the body is tranquilized, one experiences happiness, sukha. Sukhino chittang samadhiyati. When the mind is happy, one goes into concentration. So always have to really bear this in mind. It's very, very important for understanding practice that getting samadhi is not about forcing your mind to be in one place or forcing yourself through some kind of meditation process or anything like that. It's sort of this kind of process of pamudita, pamojang jayati, pamuditasa piti jayati, pamuditasa piti jayati. Can't remember the exact form there. From the pamuditasa, then the rapture arises. From the rapture, the body becomes tranquil. When the body's tranquil, experiences bliss. When one experiences bliss, the mind goes into concentration. Very important.
I want to say it's a reflection of the Mahajan Chah talks about generosity, sila, and then concentration.
Uh-huh.
So in many ways, it sort of seems to reflect that very much. You know, sort of, you know, it's that they purify all these evil, unwholesome.
Mm.
So it's that process of the attaching and then purifying, holding morality, and then the concentration.
Yeah, that's right. It rises with that kind of happiness. So then talks about going into the four Brahma Viharas. So Metta and Karuna, Mudita and Upekkha. And so a very, very lovely standard passage there on the for Brahma Viharas, with the mind sahagata, imbued with, or endowed with, or filled up with, metta, one direction. He abides having pervaded one direction. In the same the second, in the same the third, in the same the fourth. Thus, above and below, all around, everywhere, and every as to everyone as to himself. Sabhavantang, the entire world, with the mind filled with loving kindness, which is abundant and exalted or expanded, measureless, free of anger, free of ill will, he pervades that and abides. So, suppose there were a pond with clear, agreeable, cool water, transparent with smooth banks and delightful. If a man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched and thirsty, came from the east or from the west or from the north or from the south or from where you will, having come upon the pond, he would quench his thirst and his hot weather fever. So too, because if anyone from a clan of nobles goes forth from the home life into homelessness, and after encountering the Dhamma Vinaya proclaimed by the Tathagata, develops loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy and equanimity, and thereby gains internal peace, then because of that internal peace he practices the way proper to the recluse, I say. If anyone from a clan of Brahmins, or from merchants, or from workers goes forth from any clan, then they develop in this way, then they're practicing the way proper to a recluse. And similarly, if anyone from any of the clans goes forth and realizes the ending of defilements and the liberation by mind and liberation by wisdom, then he is already a recluse because of the destruction of defilements. So this is referring to that the distinction which I mentioned before in the previous sutta. In the Ekotra Agama distinguishes between one who's practicing the way of a recluse and one who's already a recluse because of their practice. So this is a similar distinction found here in a different place.
And here, talking about different castes going forth, the Amavati one gets it wrong again with the ten recollection.
Mm.
The first one is, I am committed to classlessness. This will be reflected.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see here that it doesn't matter what caste anyone goes forth from.
Yeah, yeah.
That things like the Siam Nikaya in Sri Lanka are just completely...
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's a very, very sad development where in Sri Lanka some of the Nikayas will only accept ordinations from certain castes. So obviously being very much against the whole spirit of early Buddhism. Being a kind of a movement which is rejected by the other Nikayas, but the major Nikaya, the Siam Nikaya, only accepts high caste Sri Lankans, Sinhalese, in their order.
They shave their eyebrows too, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that's.
Missing the point
just a little bit, yeah.
The first recollection for one who's gone forth, the very first one is, I am committed to classlessness.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's enough for this morning. Any more questions before we finish up?
The father's butter, that's just school? Does that mean?
Yeah, it has different meanings, but I mean, obviously you have the Nikayas as in the Majjhima Nikaya and so on. Nikaya literally means just a collection.
Yeah, but you were just talking in the context of Sri Lanka.
Yeah, the Nikayas in the early Buddhism, Nikayas was the schools. So, you know, the Theravadan would be one Nikaya, Sarvastivada would be another Nikaya. But these, yeah, the 18 schools, but these days Nikaya is usually used to mean a subsect or a grouping within the school. Okay. So in
right Pali tradition, but just different sort of subsects.
Well, in Thailand they have the two Nikayas, the Dhammayutta and the Mahanikaya. Okay. In Sri Lanka they have, I think, three main Nikayas, Siam Nikaya, Ramanya Nikaya, and Anuradhapura Nikaya. What is it? I don't remember the last one is.
Aranya?
Aranya. Yeah. So, but that's. But then they all kind of break up into different little groupings within them as well.
What distinguishes them?
They're just distinguished on organizational basis and some cases on. It's different in different places. This is different from the early schools, the early Nikayas, because the early Nikayas had clearly defined doctrinal differences in many cases. And distinct textual collections. Okay, so they have a collection in different dialects. Now all the Theravadins have the same Pali canon, And theoretically, at least, they all suppose, you know, they all accept the same basic doctrines and so on. There's no splits on doctrinal grounds. The splits are on either disputes about ordination lineages or Vinaya practices and these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So the different Nikayas in Sri Lanka were established. Siam Nikaya was established obviously from Thailand, and the other Nikayas were established from Burmese lineages. Similarly in Thailand, the Mahanikaya, which is what we are, Mahanikaya isn't really a Nikaya. Mahanikaya is just a word which was invented to kind of pull together all the different groups that were in Thailand. Yeah. And then the Dhamma Yut was a reform movement which was based on a Mon Burmese lineage. And so really that was about Vinaya practice and lineage was what the Dhamma Yut reform was supposed to be based on. Burma, I'm not sure what the origination of the different Nikayas in Burma is.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. Yeah, you've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
Ajahn Mam or
Satchaman, yeah.
Coming from different, so Ajahn Chah traditions.
That's right, yeah.
Sort of Nikayas.
Yeah. Well, see, in Thailand, I mean, the Mahanikaya has always been by far the greatest Nikaya in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
It's like 90 or 95% of the monks are Mahanikaya.
Yeah.
So it's most of the forest monks, especially in the early years, ordained in the Mahanikaya, and then some of them swapped over to Dhamma Yut. Yeah. But then some of them, like Ajahn Chah, just stayed where they were.
Sure.
And it's funny because although the tradition comes from the Mon in Burma, they don't accept Mon Burmese monks.
Right. Don't they?
Remember Jagannath was telling me about this Burmese monk friend of his that's staying in Thailand in Dhamma Yut Monastery.
Mm.
And even though he's known Lhasa and it's from Burmese tradition,
right,
they don't accept him, you know?
Right. That's interesting, isn't it?
They don't accept their own actual where their lineage comes from.
Mm.
So you say it's derived from the Mon
state in Burma, is it?
Mon is like southern Burma, which was its own.
The ones that are basically being persecuted.
Yeah, they had their own state at some stages. Yeah. So they're out in there.
So sorry, the name of this particular Nikaya that we is Mon.
Is Mahanikaya. Yeah. No, the Dhamma Yut is based on that. The Dhamma Yut is a reform movement which is based on a particular lineage from a particular Sema called the Kalyani Sema, which was supposed to be particularly pure and established on a perfect basis and so on and so forth. And it was established by Prince Mongkut, who was so disillusioned with the corruption and lack of understanding and proper practice that he saw around him in Thailand that he wasn't convinced that there were any proper monks left. So at its most virulent, the kind of the Dhamma Yut ideology is that the Mahanikayas are not actually monks, they're not actually bhikkhus. Right? They're actually just samaneras. So that they won't accept food. If food's offered to one of us, then they wouldn't accept the food. It would have to be re-offered because we're not actually bhikkhus. And we're not accepted in Patimokkha and all of these kinds of things. So that's at its most extreme. But it's the way that it's practiced goes, you know, varying degrees of you know, strictness or whatever.
But it's in the minority.
The Dhamma Yut? Yeah, much. Yeah. Yeah.
From the sounds of it, they're more exclusatory, you know.
They are. I mean, it was always a royal established sect, so it tends to be supported by the upper classes.
Sure.
Yeah. And they, you know, traditionally they always had better standards of Vinaya and so on and so forth.
Right.
But it's not necessarily true these days.
Right. Yeah. So they try to perhaps. Try to perhaps refine or correct what they perceived was lacking or missing in the other school, but has somewhat changed.
Yeah, and I think.
Well, you're saying it was a prince who sort of implemented that.
Yeah, Prince Mongkut.
Right.
When he was a monk.
Yeah. Oh, when he was a monk.
Yeah. So. He's obviously a rather remarkable individual.
With
80
children.
80 kids, yeah. He's a monk and did all these things. then disrobed and.
Yeah, obviously a starter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whatever he did, he obviously did it with enthusiasm. And you know, he had this tremendous sincerity and integrity about what he was doing. You know, he went originally when he first ordained as a monk, they sent him to this monastery to do meditation, and he would just ask the monks their questions, and none of them could answer his questions. They'd just say, "Oh, this is just how we've always done it," and this is, you know, we don't really know. He couldn't really answer anything, and so he was really dissatisfied. So it was when he went back and studied Pali very deeply, had very good knowledge of Pali, and really went back. And he was very influenced by the Western ideas that were coming out at the time, because they had, you know, in the King and I, of course, it was the king in the King and I was King Mongkut.
This is a
play
story, yeah.
In the film. Yeah. This was like mid 1800s.
Okay.
Yeah. So the king,
was his father,
Yul Brynner,
yeah,
was Prince Mongkut, who was the founder of the Dhamma Ute Order. No, but yeah, the Thais don't really like that. They don't think it was an accurate portrayal of him. But of course, the whole story was about this Western nanny or whatever she was, teacher or something, who was in the royal court, and that was quite true that there were Western teachers there in the court. So that, and they were having debates with the kind of the Christian missionaries and things like that. So he picked up a lot of these ideas, and that whole idea of going back to the original text and finding the original tradition,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was, he kind of picked these ideas up and then started applying it within the Thai context. But they wouldn't allow that when they made the remake of it. They wouldn't allow it to be filmed in Thailand because they thought it was blasphemous against the king. So they had to film it in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because they didn't like the representation.
Yeah, they didn't like the way the king was portrayed.
Used to say etc.
Etc. Yeah. I never saw it. I can't remember. I saw the only thing I saw was the film set. It was just outside of Ipoh when I was staying with my mum. They just made it, so we went for a drive and we saw the film set. But I never saw it. That was the remake.
So he obviously. Sounds like he had very good intentions.
Yeah.
And did something that in some ways is quite necessary.
Yeah.
You know, if he went to, you know, like and couldn't get a satisfactory answer on meditation.
Yeah. And I mean, the problem is, of course, that in Thailand, the royal family is so revered that it then becomes very hard to move on from there, you know? And so it's tended to be stuck in the, you know, due to their reverence to, and it seems to be stuck in that,
right.
You know, they haven't.
Whatever was developed at that point in time by him hasn't sort of been sort of.
Hasn't gone further, yeah. Right. And even like the textbooks and things like that that they're using are still the textbooks that were written, not by him, but by his, I think it was his son, or either son or grandson also went into robes. And he wrote all the basic textbooks, which was the first time that in Thailand, you know, you had kind of modern books, you know, on Pali studies, books written in Thai, and then he wrote these.
Okay, yes, so the other tradition didn't
come. No, it's a Western idea to write textbooks and things, and the Vinaya textbooks and things, and they're still used in Thailand today. It's like 100 years later. They're still using the same textbooks. So, and of course, you know, they were a great innovation in their time, but they're very outdated, but there's a very great reluctance to change them, yeah.
And you said that the tacking on of the label Mahanika is similar to Mahasangika.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Because Mahasangikas are the.
Well, what he criticized. The Mahanikai, specifically he criticized them for being Achinna Kapikavada, which is a term taken from the Second Council, and it means those who sort of basically mindlessly do everything because it's what their teachers said or what the tradition says, rather than investigating what's Dhamma and Vinaya. And so this is what he criticized the Mahanikai for. And, yeah.
And they've largely turned into that themselves today.
Yeah. Well, that's a matter of interpretation.
Yeah.
Certainly does seem that way sometimes, yeah.
Bhagavato Sāra.